Welcome everyone to this week's episode on Inquisitor's Odyssey. We're your hosts, Sam
and Tawanda.
We decided to do a second segment on tech as we didn't feel like we fully covered the important questions about its role in our society and its effect on the environment. We live in an almost constant state of connectedness, but it's worth taking a deep dive to see if that's really a good thing, and also how it's shaping our thoughts about the world around us.
The way our technology has been advancing has put us in this position where we have to start really reconsidering how we view our privacy, right? So we're moving to this place where you're pretty much almost 100% connected, right? Most phones these days, you can't really switch it off. The battery doesn't come out of it. So it's, in a sense, always powered on. Even when it's off, there's still a part of it that can function and you can't completely disconnect it, or just, you know, you're kind of reliant on always being connected to the internet. You find that your, you know, smart homes, everything in your house is connected to the internet, from your fridge, maybe like your TV. You've got a smart speaker in your house. Your phone is obviously going to be probably connected all the time. And yeah, I do think that's kind of a worry, it may be a concern for some people, just living in this state of always being connected. Like, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, for sure. I think there are some privacy concerns when it comes to being connected all the time, because I guess there are people with malicious intent that could, you know, maybe rig your house or your smart home or your phone or your laptop, and you wouldn't be able to, like, have anything to fall back on. Like, you'd like maybe turn off the phone and take out the battery or something. I mean, if you do suspect that there's something going on like that, but these days you really can't do anything like that, because you could be fully connected even though you have turned on your phone and things like that. So I guess for people of interest, it can be difficult. And I suppose if you are worried, there might be alternatives. You can buy like a phone or a laptop that has those privacy features, but then you're also putting your trust on that company to fulfill your privacy needs. So I suppose there is a level of trust that you have to give to the companies that actually make these devices. So I think either way, if we're not going to live like Edward Snowden out in Russia with this laptop that you can turn off the camera physically and turn off the mic physically and things like that, there's always a chance that somebody might be listening in on what you're saying. But I think for the majority of people, that is not that big of a concern, but it is hard to, I guess, regulate it. Yeah, that's what I think.
But I feel like it should be a concern for most people. Because, yeah, obviously, I recently watched The Social Dilemma, and it was painting this picture that we're basically the product now. And that kind of makes sense to me, because these days it's less about companies trying to find a way that they can sell things to you, but trying to find more things that they can offer you and tell you that, oh, here, we can have this thing connected to the internet. And to you, to most people, it just kind of seems like, oh yeah, I've got this, I don't know, my fridge can receive software updates now, or it can track what's in my fridge so that it tells me when I run out of milk, and I get a notification on my phone like, you're out of milk. But then there's also the other side of it, which is that all of this data that's being collected is obviously, from the way I've been hearing about it explained, is like, that's their source of income. Like, they're not looking to you saying, oh yeah, we want you to pay us for our service or something. They don't really care about you. For them, it's just trying to find more ways to keep track of you and use that data. For example, you can say you can't switch off your phone in any real sense, or now people have got heart rate monitors, you know, sleep trackers on their phones, and all of this is just data that they're collecting that they sell so that they can make money off that while you get all of these little conveniences that seem like I'm benefiting, but it's just one, an invasion of your privacy that's not really being respected. Even if in some cases they say we keep your personal information out, we just want the data, like we just want to know how much you sleep, we don't care who you are, but we just want to know how much you sleep or what you eat. But all of this is sold to advertisers. Advertisers know, oh, this person usually has this brand of milk in their fridge. Next thing you're online and you see ads for that. And it's just, I don't think it should be done in that way. It's certainly, yeah, it's convenient. It can be convenient in some cases, but also maybe it should be, first of all, optional, but also just you're getting the product, but you know, someone else is just benefiting financially off of your information. And like you're saying, there has to be that trust aspect of it. You're now trusting some company to ensure that you're protected. And you know, even Google tells you, you get security updates. If your fear is being hacked, then yeah, definitely you have to become like Snowden. But if it's just you not wanting to be this basically a data mine or being used for data mining, then that's kind of becoming more and more difficult for the majority of people to opt out of.
Yeah, I get what you mean. And yeah, I think what I said was more concerning people that don't want to be hacked, that have sensitive information on their devices and things like that. But for people that, I guess, don't want targeted ads, I admit it's kind of creepy. You just talk with your friend about something when your phone's like near you, and then next thing you know, you got ads for it on Instagram and on Facebook. But it is kind of creepy, and it feels like an invasion of our privacy. But if we can shed light on that to, like, I suppose, lawmakers, and there have been attempts, I think, Congress interviews with Mark Zuckerberg and Google CEO, I feel like they did explain that their main sources of income is the ads and targeted ads, and it didn't seem too serious of a concern that they would like tell them not to do it or like stop advertisers from getting that information about you. But yeah, it's creepy. But I don't know what exactly we can do about it if we're willingly like using the services that they do provide. Unless there are services that come up as an alternative that don't use our information for targeted ads and stuff like that. I suppose in the terms of services of Google and Facebook and Instagram, part of using it is being susceptible to targeted ads. So you can try to go out of your way and try to prevent those targeted ads. I think there are ways where you could use like VPNs and ad blockers and stuff like that, but I'm not exactly sure what we can do about it.
Yeah, I understand that it's the primary source of income for most of those companies, because Facebook or Google is not charging you for their search services or anything, but what they gain from that, it doesn't really feel proportional. And to me, it just feels like it's like a cow convincing itself that the farmer cares so much about it because it gets food and healthcare and protection. And I'm like, newsflash, buddy, what you're getting out of this is nowhere close to what they are getting out of you. Right, and it's the same way. They are collecting all of your information. And we've seen, like, with Facebook and the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, where they say that they can keep that information away from people who can misuse it, but sometimes they fail to do that. And I just don't think it's healthy to be putting, I mean, they don't call this the information age for nothing. Data and information, those are probably the most important things in this technological world that we are in, and you're constantly at risk of someone misusing that. And if they do gain access to that, the ways that they can misuse that, it's so much that you just feel like, yeah, you can take precautions, you can clear up, you know, trackers, their browsers like Mozilla can block trackers and everything. But for example, I don't know if you've noticed this, right? But if you open a website that uses cookies, right? And they give you that prompt, you know, accept cookies, it's usually just accept, and the reject option is buried under, like, it's like accept all, or you have to find like more settings, and then reject all is kind of buried somewhere where you have to actually go to look for it. And I think it's like they're required to put it there, but they just think, well, we don't have to put it where it's easily accessible. But yeah, that's something that maybe isn't so, maybe not so serious. Someone might feel like, okay, that's not that big of a deal, but I don't know where you would be on, let's say, facial recognition. You know, that's not really something that you can just say, oh, I'm opting out of it, especially when it becomes required by the law. You know, you've got security cameras everywhere around cities, and they all have that facial recognition software where anyone who has access to that system can. And I don't know if you watched Snowden's movie, but, well, obviously since it was a movie, there may be some level of dramatization, but you find that there are databases that can access all of those security cameras, even just, you know, random people. And sometimes you might not be a person of interest, but you might be linked to one, and you just might end up being used as a pawn in some game, you know. But that's a whole other thing too.
Yeah, I suppose facial recognition might be a bit invasive, but I think some would also argue that it has some level of good as well. Well, I don't think they mean it in a bad way. Like, well, to be fair, I guess even the creation of Facebook and social media in general didn't have bad intentions in the beginning. Like, I mean, not saying that they have bad intentions now, but according to the Social Dilemma, it has kind of turned in a different direction, more into like selling ads, making people use their services by exploiting their primitive brain functions. And I think for facial recognition as well, it was meant to be to recognize people that are, I guess, wanted, or, you know, if somebody does something bad, then you know who it is. It's like having a security camera, even without facial recognition. It's having like a security camera in a private store. It's like, if you're gonna use the store, I guess you would have to be in agreement with the policy of the store, which is that there will be a security camera, just don't steal anything, just go in, do your thing, and walk out. But I guess if you add facial recognition into that, it's more like, yeah, if you do steal, then we can find you, like, we know who you are. And I don't know if that's something valuable that we don't want to get rid of, or is it something, I don't know what you think. Do you think like facial recognition should be banned, like the government shouldn't use any database where they can identify people, store information about people?
I think we're constantly in this place where we are weighing the costs and the benefits of pretty much everything, right? And with facial recognition, I think, like I mentioned the last time, my concern with most of these advancements is you have to imagine what's the worst thing that could happen if this technology gets into the wrong hands, right? And you think, okay, sure, we've got this technology that's, you know, facial recognition. If there's a wanted criminal out there, it makes it so much easier for us to find them, or something like that. And it makes people feel safer, you know. You're not really concerned. You are obviously concerned, you know, you don't know what the next person is gonna do. But there's always that thought in the back of your mind that no one is gonna wanna try anything because there's that risk that they're always being watched and they could get caught. But then, you know, if in the wrong hands, in the hands of someone who wants to target certain people, certain groups of people, or, you know, oppress certain minorities or whatever, you find that that also is very useful for them. I remember during the Black Lives Matter protests when they started in the USA, people were saying, don't post pictures of protesters online because those were being used to find them, and a lot of them were actually wearing masks to the protest because they were being used to find them after, you know, afterwards you just walking along on the streets and they're like, you were the protest, and they could use that to hunt you down. And yeah, that becomes problematic because sometimes it's in, like, in a case where people are out protesting against a very clear injustice, and then that's used to target them later on, you feel like maybe it may have had the best intentions, you know, we can catch criminals. But one thing that should be pointed out about technology is that maybe sometimes the technology itself is not good or bad, but it's only as good as the person whose hands it's in. And if the person decides that, well, this certain minority group needs to be, you know, hunted down and locked up, then they could very easily do that using facial recognition, and you can't really do anything about that.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about it last time as well. The technology itself isn't exactly good or bad in and of itself. It's more like the way we interact with it. Like, social media was innocent. I mean, I was trying to connect people all across the world. Like, that was really valuable to people. But then obviously, profit becomes king, and they wanted to use it for advertisements, and, you know, people wanted to use it for spreading their propaganda and stuff like that. It becomes this, I guess, bad place. I mean, Facebook was at its core a good thing for people to connect with other people. And I think we talked about the same exact thing last time as well. It's like, if you really want to focus on the worst things, it feels like there won't be as much progress because you're always going to be afraid what somebody is going to do. There has to be that kind of a healthy balance between what you're creating and trying to prevent bad people from doing it. Because, I mean, you have to manage risk at some point. You can't just succumb to risk and be like, no, like, there's the worst person could use this to manipulate everybody and, I don't know, change the whole world. But you kind of have to add the risk management to that as well. Like, so you would put things in place where you'd be able to prevent people from doing those bad things. But overall, yeah, they could still do that, and the worst person could get their hands on it, and they would be to blame, I guess. People would jump on their case, be like, yeah, we told you so, but it's hard, yeah.
It's funny, it's kind of a running joke when people talk about all of these social media sites and how they came about, and you always hear people saying, oh, it's funny how we've got the most socially inept people basically deciding how the world communicates. And it's kind of worrying because, sure, yeah, these people may have started with the best of intentions, you know, but there's the concern that a lot of them might not have been the most sociable people, right? It's like, obviously, depending on how many people you've met and interacted with, you should on some level know that giving people unregulated free speech may be not the best idea. It's like, you're freeing information, yes. Obviously, you might think, oh yeah, definitely we give people this platform where everyone can talk, they can post their opinions and everything, and we're good, you know, they're gonna brainstorm new ideas, they're gonna exchange information, and we can allow information to get to people who've never had access to it. But also, on the other hand, you have to know that the world is full of bullies and trolls and just plain liars who are out there not really trying to get information into the world, but just trying to cause commotion and confusion. And then, like you said, when profit becomes king, and a lot of these social media sites, they've been shown to use tactics that are geared towards making them addictive. That is their goal, because their money comes from you using it more. from the advertising. So they don't really care what you're doing there. That's why you have all of those, let's say, the algorithms that show you what you want. They're basically studying what you want so that they can show you more of it, because they don't care if what you're looking at is false or misinformation or lies or harmful. To them, it's just, they just need more interaction, more clicks, more likes, more comments, more retweets, because that's the data they need to monetize this platform. So you worry that the people who are at the forefront of all of this aren't the best people to be there. And yeah, I get that. I get this need to connect everything, but sometimes you don't need that connection. Like, for example, I feel like I've kind of been annoyed by this trend where a lot of games, especially mobile gaming, is now, you know, it's integrated with some level of social media connection. For example, you want to play Fortnite, right? You're playing with people all around the world, which is, yeah, if I'm playing with my friends and people I know, then yeah, it's awesome. You know, we get to talk and play and we catch up. But on the other hand, it's like, you never know what kind of sickos or weirdos you might get paired in with on those platforms. And yeah, children are playing those games. And you feel like maybe not everything needs to become connected and social. I think for me, on this idea of just connecting everything, socializing everything, I think we should learn to draw the line at some point. Obviously, maybe people would differ in their opinions of where that line should be, but I just think maybe not everything needs to be connected.
I think people did want that unregulated freedom of speech like they would in real life. I think the premise of social media in general was to give people this social connection where it's, I guess, as close to real life as possible, where they can actually talk with anybody they please. I mean, I guess the public posts are regulated in a sense where maybe you might not be able to use certain words and stuff like that. I guess that's based on their terms of services and policy. But the thing is, unless you make it a universal kind of rule, or like a law, I guess, where the social media companies can't use unregulated speech. Let's say, yeah, it's not a rule and Facebook decides to stop and Twitter decides to stop. And I guess Instagram decides to stop as well. It's like there will be another emerging social media platform that does use it, and people will flock to that and use that. Like, as soon as you kind of censor people and stop people from saying things, people kind of move to a place where they can say that. So unless you make it so that none of the social media platforms can offer people a voice where they can say whatever they want, there will be a platform that will come up with it, and then people will go to that. So I don't think Facebook or Twitter will stop giving people unregulated freedom of speech out of their will. Like, they wouldn't say, oh yeah, this is bad, let us stop. Because people will stop using it. I'm sure people will stop using it, and they will just move to another platform that does offer it. So if it's fine in real life, I don't know why it's so hard online. I suppose it's that whole, we talked about it last time, where if you do encounter a bully, it's going to be like 24/7 because it's on your phone. And I guess it's hard to stop that. Yeah, I suppose social media should have like its own set of rules. It should be regulated by law so that they can make it as friendly to use as possible without also making it so that it's not like, like a children's playground where you're not allowed to cuss, you're not allowed to say this, say that. It is kind of complicated. And when it comes to games as well, like you said, you could be playing with a bunch of friends, and you'd play and you'd be catching up as well. And I guess at some point the game will also require you to use your voice, like, because let's say you're playing Fortnite or PUBG. It wouldn't be fun if you're just talking. I mean, you're just playing without talking. Like, you have to communicate in order to, like, play. And that becomes not that I guess all games are making it so that it would revolve around you communicating, but there are games that would be more fun if you can talk to the other person, and more, yeah, I guess more fun if you communicate. I don't think that's a bad thing. You can, I guess, report people if it's so bad, but I guess you will have to learn to deal with people like that even in real life. So I'm not sure if just removing all the voice chats from games would help you even in the long run when you actually do encounter people in real life. Like, you can't just mute them out in real life. I mean, in the games, you can mute them out, which is also an option for you. But as for games, I don't know. You do come in it to like relax and play, and somebody might ruin your day, but it's not the end of the world. Like, you're not gonna encounter that all the time, and if you do, you can report them. Like, there are some risk management put in place where if you do encounter something, can try to do something about it. But I think we should be careful not to like sweep out the whole thing, because the worst thing that could happen is like maybe like somebody would ruin your day or like insult you, and I don't know, you'd be hurt and stuff like that. So I think there has to be some kind of proportionality where you assess what it is doing. If it's genuinely something good where people do enjoy it, and then there's some bad people that could ruin it, you try to add those things, like, you know, reporting people or like blocking people, muting people. So I think on the gaming side, I would say that it's kind of it's fine. I'm not sure if you agree with me.
Yeah, the gaming side, okay, it's not that big of a deal for me personally. I think it's just one of those things where I would appreciate if, obviously, like you said, you can just mute people, and also definitely it's actually important to learn to deal with, let's call them, the undesirables of the world. But yeah, you kind of want that option where, apart from the fact that it's got these chat, it's online too. And even a game like PUBG or Fortnite, a battle royale, where I might just want to play this game without necessarily having to be either online or playing against people around the world. Like, I would want that to be an option, but yeah, it's not that serious. It's not something to, you know, get all upset about. But there's a point you mentioned there. It's very true that if, let's say, Twitter or Facebook just woke up and decided that they're filtering a lot of what goes through their platform, then yeah, someone else is just gonna come along and make a platform that doesn't filter, right? They're already there, like Reddit, 4chan. But even beyond that, the worrying thing for me is the logic that a lot of these people have is actually that they think that they're the best equipped to, let's say, get that right balance of regulating speech and just getting the best out of that technology. And I remember it's a slightly different thing. Elon Musk, for so long, he was a critic of artificial intelligence. He said artificial intelligence is gonna be the end of humanity, you know, we should pump the brakes on it. Then he got into Neuralink, and I remember in one of talk, his logic, he was like, I realized that people are not going to stop developing artificial intelligence, and he felt like he should be there to monitor it in a sense, because, you know, he's feeling like, oh, I'm the one who's actually being logical and thinking about how this can become dangerous, so it would be good if I was there monitoring it and keeping track of how it's advancing. And I feel like that's the logic that a lot of, like, for example, Mark Zuckerberg, he's refused to relinquish control of Facebook, while a lot of these companies, they lowered their percentage of shares, you know, sell some to the public, investors and everything. Mark Zuckerberg has ensured that he's maintained a controlling stake in Facebook because he feels he's the best equipped to steer that platform in the right direction. And you just kind of feel like maybe not, but hey, it's his creation, it's his platform, and we're using it. And if he wants to determine the path it takes, then well, who are we to tell him not to? But I just feel like maybe sometimes the people in control of the technology might not be the best to be in control of that technology, and yeah, that becomes a problem. But on the other hand, you know, technology isn't really just restricted to social media, right? There's something I've noticed, and I just wanted to hear what you think on, if you've noticed, especially in like the mobile phone industry, right? They've significantly shortened upgrade cycles to the point where I remember it used to be so weird when Samsung used to have their Galaxy S launch early in the year, then Galaxy Note later in the year, and they were the one company that was doing two flagship launches a year. And then now pretty much most companies have moved to that, and I'm skeptical, like, is this really necessary, especially when you consider the potential environmental damage these phones, yeah, a lot of companies, they're into recycling and everything, but a lot of this is just new materials that are being mined, and you know, you're mining more and more resources to feed this hungry beast that is just people who want to buy new phones, even when you know that probably in 6 months the changes in the technology are very minimal, almost negligible. But now phone makers kind of feel like, yeah, we can release a flagship earlier in the year, then later in the year, and a whole bunch of other phones in between. For me, it's the environmental side of it. Is this sustainable, just mining so much resources just to feed consumerist culture? Where do we draw the line? Do we say, oh yeah, you know, we now want to release 3, 4, 5 flagships a year? Even when they release 2 flagships a year, right? It's not just, oh yeah, we give you one phone earlier in the year, then another phone later in the year. It's like when that earlier in the year release happens, it's going to be 3, 4 variants of that phone. Same thing again later in the year. Is it really necessary?
I think from my perspective, it isn't necessary. You could just release one flagship a year. Like, I guess that's fine for consumers. I should say for the majority of consumers, but I guess enthusiasts will be, I guess, out of their mind when their favorite phone manufacturer releases like these new phones every 3 months. It'd be like they get to see what new thing comes up, and like you said, they might be negligible, but then we've seen how technology changes so fast. I suppose there might be some bigger upgrades throughout the year, depending, maybe not from the same manufacturer, but you know, when multiple manufacturers start making their flagship, trying to outsell the competition, I guess that does speed up the advancements per se. But if you look at it from, instead of a consumer standpoint, if you look at it from somebody who's concerned from the environment, it doesn't seem sustainable. Obviously, the more you mine, the more it gets worse. But even if you look at the number of phone manufacturers that are out there, it's a lot. They're all doing their stuff, like, they're doing their own thing. And I guess the same way, you can't really limit how many manufacturers there are, like, if you want to stop new manufacturers because they're hurting the environment. I suppose all I can point to is, if you're not gonna make it like a law, they're not gonna stop out of good faith or whatever. So I'm not sure, I haven't read anything about it, but I'm not sure if phone manufacturers are contributing to climate change as much as you'd think. Maybe you read up on it, I'm not sure, but it seems like they're just basically gathering components from all these other companies and, you know, putting them together and making a profit out of it. I'm not sure if they really do have that much of an effect on the environment. I suppose maybe if you're releasing 3, 4 flagships a year, you'd have to do like 3, 4 different release events, and you'd have to make tons of phones and tons of packaging, tons of chargers, maybe unrecyclable stuff. You'd have to, I don't know, throw away a lot of waste as compared to just releasing one flagship a year. That could be bad, but yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how much effect they have. I don't know if it's a priority to stop them as compared to other things. But although, yeah, if they can cut back, obviously it's favorable, but unless you force them to do that, I don't think they will do it. And the question would be, would they think it's fair when there are other companies already, other unrelated sectors of the technology industry or other industries that have higher effects on the climate change? I don't know if they would think it would be fair to make laws to stop phone manufacturers instead of going after the big guns that are truly doing the damage. So definitely, if they can cut back, it would be good. I don't think it is necessary to release like 4 or 5 flagships a year from one company, but obviously there are many companies. They all do their things per year. Yeah, in 1 year you could see like a ton of flagships released. So yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think it's hard to quantify exactly how much of, if we're talking about the environmental impact of mobile phone manufacturing specifically, how much that is contributing to climate change and global warming. But I do think that in a sense there is recognition of the part that they're playing, because it's still a rumor at this point, but there's been talk about Apple shipping their phones without accessories like chargers and everything, which, yeah, at first I was like, Apple being Apple, you know, they just take something away and they're still gonna charge you the same thing for the phone. But it actually makes sense because they haven't changed their charger in what, 5-6 years, and most people who are buying an iPhone probably have had one before, or usually you find that they're people who are upgrading. And for those who are buying for the first time, I think they might switch to a model where it's optional. You get your phone and you can maybe top up and you get the accessories too. But that might be beneficial because you don't want people just, you know, piling up phone chargers and earphones and whatever else they used to bundle with their phones. And all of this is stuff that's being manufactured, and all of that has a trickle down effect where a lot of these things is like, it's a rubber and everything, it's not really recyclable. And those are the kind of things where if you burn them, you get toxic fumes that go into the air and everything. So it is concerning when you consider that a lot of the materials that go into phones, maybe they're not recyclable, or maybe they're not being recycled, right? You find e-waste dumps all over the world where all of this waste from phone companies is just, they're being dumped there. And even just like you're talking about having multiple launches, right? It's like you have 3-4 launches, you know, people have to attend those launches. That means increased air travel, people moving around a lot more, and all of that is having an impact. And like you're saying, it's maybe not necessary. And there's even just, you feel like on some level they would be tempted to make their phones less durable because they're not really trying to make your phone to last. You know, they know that we're going to be releasing a new phone in 3-4 months, right? And obviously the hope is that you buy it, so they're not going to try to make it more durable. Like a wise man once said, you know, glass is glass and glass breaks. And there are benefits of using glass, like even though for maybe the last 5 years or so, the accepted opinion has been that you need a glass back phone to have something like wireless charging. But recently Google released their Pixel 5 and it's got a metal back and it can charge wirelessly, so you don't really know if there may be some dishonesty there. You probably have to trust them when they tell you, oh yeah, we had to make this design decision to facilitate this technology, and you're not sure, but yeah, you just have to trust them, take their word for it. Which sometimes when you recognize that there are people who are in it to just make money, you're kind of skeptical.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I saw the review with Dave2D as well, and he was quite surprised that the phone had like a metal or aluminium back, and they were able to incorporate wireless charging into it. But I feel like there could be public studies that have been released about the whole technology around wireless charging, where glass has been the ideal kind of material to add wireless charging. But as you said, like, I'm not sure as well, and as you said, they could have been able to do that the whole time, and they lied. I'm not sure. I haven't really looked into it. And for sure, you're not wrong to be skeptical. I thought about it as well when I watched as soon as I watched the review, I was like, so are you telling me like they could have done it with aluminium? Because I remember mine, the Nexus 6P I had was also an aluminium bag. I'm not sure if they really had wireless charging. Wireless charging wasn't popular at that time, but yeah, for the longest time it has been like a glass bag. Like, as soon as you saw the phone didn't have a glass bag, you're like, oh, no wireless charging. But it seems like things are about to change now, so we'll see how that goes. But I haven't looked into it enough to say, yeah, they're lying, like they could have done it. But I have a feeling that the technology around wireless charging and glass being the ideal material to use is kind of public. Like, people know how, kind of, some people do know how it works, like how the wireless charging technology that they had was able to use the glass back. But of course, they could have been withholding their advancements just enough to make that profit. And then now, yeah, I have this feeling. I think I was talking to someone as well. It's like the technology that we're getting now isn't. It's probably not bleeding edge. They do trials. They come up with new stuff, and then they'll give us like a part of it. Like, they wouldn't give us like the new latest and greatest technology that they've been working on. The latest and greatest technology would be what they release. They could be working on an advanced, more advanced stuff, but then they would release this, like, slightly older for them, but for us it would be like this new thing that's coming up. So yeah, I think it's very natural to be skeptical about it. And maybe we might be seeing a change in how wireless charging is going to be applied for other companies as well.
You know, the cynical side of me would be thinking, definitely, obviously we're not getting the bleeding edge of technology, but also I would also feel like they withhold it just long enough for you to want it desperately. Or it's like, you know, it has to be incremental. It's, if they had just thrown you wireless charging on a metal back phone back in 2014, then you'd probably keep that phone longer. If you look at Apple, for example, if you see how much they charge for a phone back replacement, it's like $400-$500. You're thinking, if they put a metal back on that phone, then they're not gonna get that money. They know that you can drop your phone as much as you want and you're good. So yeah, I'm always skeptical, but obviously you have to understand that when technology is still in its early stages, it's being experimented on and everything, then no company is gonna rush to throw it at you. Like, Samsung had the issue with their Note 7 a few years back. A lesser company would not have survived that. It's just by the fact that they are Samsung and people trust them, that people had faith in them enough to actually say that was just a blip, you know, but they can come back from that. So yeah, we hardly ever right there on the bleeding edge of technological advancements. But I think now, with, like you're saying, there's a ton of these phone makers and they're always trying to outsell each other. It's pushing them. It's a double-edged sword because it's pushing companies to try to always constantly outdo each other, you know. And on one hand, we're probably going to be getting a lot of half-baked products. That's why I feel like a lot of even tech YouTubers are always saying, maybe don't rush to be an early adopter, unless you're really an enthusiast and you want to be right there when this thing comes out. It's like, maybe let it have one or two generations first, then you buy into it. Because most of the time, it's like this desperation to outsell competition, it pushes a lot of companies to rush, you know, folding phones. They've been trying to get the under display selfie camera, and the first iteration is probably not going to be that good, and rushing into adopting to that is not the best idea. But on this topic of availability, just there's another side which also worries me, and not worries me, but it's a little issue, which is, for example, right, they've probably been able to make artificial organs, you know, 3D printed or something, but even using technology for that, you know, pacemakers, and like I mentioned, Elon Musk and Neuralink, right? It's all of these technologies that are being used to improve the human body. But my concern is just, you know, are we gonna create this new gap? Like, already there's a gap, you know, between the haves and the have-nots. But what happens when I can afford to get this brain implant in my head? Because even you say, oh yeah, we can improve the technology behind, you know, transplants, make it easier for people to get transplants and everything. It's like, not everyone can afford one. You know, maybe we should kind of be focusing on the things that can be more accessible, right? I remember one guy, I can't remember what it was, saying it's funny how they've improved to the point where they've almost perfected something like open heart surgery, but there's still no consensus on whether you're better off eating healthy and not exercising, or exercising and eating whatever you want, or let's say exercising a little bit every single day, or just a lot during the weekend. All of those little things that are so accessible to everyone. We're trying to fix all the problems with technology. We say, oh hey, look, we can get you, we can 3D print a new heart for you, we can do this, we can do that. And what happens when all of this is not accessible to everyone, and one group of people can use their advantages, whether they're financial or anything, to get access to all of this, like Neuralink, right? Imagine having this implant in your head that's constantly got you connected to the internet. You're like, you're already one step ahead of someone who doesn't have that. And by the time that person catches up, they're probably not gonna catch up.
Yeah, I understand where that's coming from. I agree with the Neuralink stuff. Maybe that seems more like an accessory, but I think even on his interview with Joe Rogan, he did mention that, I guess in the beginning, it would be more for people with brain damage or like problems with their brain, where maybe they can't fully use, like maybe they can't use a part of their brain properly like everybody does. I guess something genetic, where the connections aren't as strong and things like that. So it would be kind of to help them, and I think that's always going to be a risk or a problem when there's always a wealth gap between different people. Like even chemotherapy, like the basic treatment for cancer, it's gonna cost a lot. But I mean, that's even to get like a sliver of hope that maybe you could fight it, and that's not even like guaranteed. So there are some people that can afford chemotherapy, and there are people that can't afford chemotherapy. And yeah, if there is a way to make that more accessible instead of, like, I really can't say they should make it more accessible instead of making it more effective or making it more perfecting it, because I feel like that's also equally important. Because yeah, if you're gonna do it to somebody, you might as well put the time in to make sure that it's safe and there's a high chance of success for people that are already, like, maybe even putting themselves in debt to pay and use. But but I definitely agree that it has to come at some point. At some point, it has to be of the utmost importance that it becomes more accessible for people. And yeah, I mean, basically nothing is for free. So even to get a consultation with the doctor, like, you gotta pay for that at some places. So maybe people can't afford that as well. Maybe people can't afford the medicine, like, even the medicine from a pharmacy, like, maybe people can't afford that. And I definitely agree, if there is a way to make it more accessible, it is, but I don't know if focusing on making it better is also necessarily, like, a bad thing. But for Neuralink, I guess, when it becomes this, like, accessory where you might be gaining, like, an advantage or something like that, that would be kind of weird. And I'm sure people are going to bring the ethics of it. It's like having genetically engineered babies that are smarter. At the beginning, it's going to be for stopping genetic problems. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Like, genetics, it's too complicated. You might try to correct something in the genome, and then maybe you might be messing up something in another part of the sequence. Like, it's still kind of complicated, but it's for the better. Like, if there are lots of people that are being affected by these genetic problems, and if you really think about, well, like, what could the worst people do with it? Yeah, maybe they might try to make their kid smarter, or more handsome, more beautiful, more stronger, more athletic, I don't know, like, something which isn't really necessary and would give them, like, an unfair advantage to somebody that's, like, natural born. But I'm not sure if there's any harm in trying to make it better. If it's not, like, for, like, accessorizability reasons. And definitely, it is a concern. It is definitely a concern. I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I would argue that the worst people would probably try to make an army of genetically modified supermen to take over the world or something. But yeah, with genetics, obviously it's this slow march. But actually, a concern I would have is, it feels like you're saying with Neuralink, right, that it's going to be used on people with brain injuries and everything. It kind of feels to me like the vulnerable people are the testing ground for this, right? Like, you find a baby or someone, like a fetus, they're still in the womb, and you find that, or maybe a couple that wants to have a baby and they have some genetic disorder, maybe that they both share, that there's a high likelihood that it's going to be passed on to their baby, and they want that to be edited out before they have their child. And you feel like it's all going to be tested on the most vulnerable people who need it. But as soon as people are certain that it works and that the side effects are minimal, then obviously the rich people are going to rush for it. For example, you can have something like plastic surgery, right, where initially it may have been used to treat people with, you know, burns, scars, you know, injuries that need to be corrected. And it's like, yeah, you have this, you can get plastic surgery. And then now it becomes something for the rich people to make themselves look more beautiful or something like that. So that's kind of the way it usually goes. It starts out with, you know, the vulnerable people who really need that thing, and they use that to test it on those people. And as soon as you realize that it's actually available, and usually it's like when they're testing it out because they need you more than, well, you probably need them too, but they still need you to make sure that their technology works, it's gonna be, hey, you know, we're getting test subjects to test this on. And as soon as they show it works, it's now like $10,000 to get it or something, and most people can't afford it, and it becomes available to the rich. And usually when it's something that's, like we mentioned, plastic surgery or genetic engineering, right, it's gonna be something that the world, they are gonna flock to, they're gonna run to that because they know ways that they can benefit from that, or they can use that to their advantage. And then those vulnerable people that you may have said, oh yeah, this technology is gonna be for people with brain injuries or genetic disorders, you might end up finding out that they might not get access to it, or at least not easily.
Well, the this is why we can't have nice things, because somebody's gonna ruin it. Like, so, like, the technology is there for people to use, it's good, this will help people definitely, but then somebody's gonna ruin it at some point. I guess if we're gonna learn from our mistakes, we're just gonna bury it, I guess, like bury all the studies that are being done for genetic engineering. We'll just be like, okay, never mind, this is something that we'll never unlock, nobody gets to modify their genes. But I think we've already opened the box. Somebody out in China or somewhere is gonna do their own private study, and they're just gonna use it for their own good. So better it be able to help people that are in need of it. I mean, yeah, at first it's gonna be for the most vulnerable people that have like a child that could possibly inherit this genetic problem that the parent has. And then, you know, if studies get better, we might be able to make the child immune to some disease from birth. Maybe we might discover something about cancer that we haven't before that would prevent people from getting cancer as well. And I don't know, I mean, there's so many things that are possible with it. It's like we could all be immune to HIV. Like, you know how many people suffer from HIV? It's like we can actually make sure that nobody can get HIV. It's like just thinking about the possibilities, it's just you could see so much good in it that it's such a shame that there are people trying to use it for bad things that are going to make people so hesitant to even be hesitant to consider doing further studies, because if they do end up succeeding, it might go sideways. I agree with the plastic surgery as well. It was intended for people with maybe deformities, burns, something from an accident. It was meant to help them, but after a while it just turned into commercial plastic surgery, and that's normal nowadays. That's like fine, a lot of people do it even though they don't have any deformities. I guess that's also related to another social problem where people are like very worried about their looks and things like that, where there's like some social pressure to, I guess, be more attractive. And yeah, that's a whole other social problem that people encounter. But if you do look at the trajectory of the technology, yeah, it was meant to help people that are really in need, and then it turns into this commercial stuff. And by the looks of it, yeah, the genetic engineering will start off meaning to help the most vulnerable people, and it could just become this commercial stuff where people that can't afford it will do it and possibly might gain advantage against somebody who can't afford it in a certain field. And for sure, it is not gonna be affordable for everybody. Seeing how much work that it takes and how much research is being done, how much money it's probably gonna be poured into it, considering the risks that they're taking, it's not gonna be affordable. Even meaning to help people with the genetic problems, it's the people that can afford it that will get the help. Like some middle income family that has a genetic problem that don't want to pass it to their children are not going to be able to afford it either. Like, it's the rich people that can afford it and that do have those concerns that will be able to do those procedures. And yeah, I'm not sure if there's a way to level the playing field here, because there's always going to be a wealth gap at some point. I mean, that's how I see it. Maybe not. Maybe there'll be a time where everybody will have the same amount of money. I don't know if that will happen, but I agree that the gap is gonna get wider and wider and wider. And at least if not making it equally accessible to everybody, at least decreasing the gap would be very beneficial to a lot of people. A lot of people, yeah.
It would be ideal if at some point, you know, there was no wealth gap or something, but that for the moment at least seems like something that's here to stay. And I just feel like this is kind of what happens when I don't want to see people lose track of the goals, because I don't know what people's goals would be. Let's say the scientist who's out there working 18 hours a day trying to perfect genetic engineering for humans. It's, I don't know what he's trying to achieve, but in the case where you've got this technology being developed with the intention of serving people, I think when you kind of lose sight of that and you start to, let's say, prioritize profit over people, then definitely you will have cases where that technology is misused because, yeah, someone is not really trying to do with that technology what maybe its creator wanted it to be used for. And I feel like that's what happens most of the time. It's, we start to prioritize these abstract concepts, you know, profit and all of that, and that kind of takes precedence. You're saying this technology is meant to help people because you feel like, yeah, sure, you're trying to make a profit from improving plastic surgery or transplants or that, and yes, maybe you want to make a profit, but at the end of the day, this is a technological advancement that should be applied on people, right? And then when you make it too expensive for people, then who are you making it for? Probably just the rich people. And yeah, if you can make it expensive enough, then sure, you might be able to make as much money from 10 people who want but probably don't need plastic surgery, when you could have made the same amount from maybe 1,000 people who do need it, who are not as wealthy. So I feel like we just lose track of, maybe, I'm not gonna say it's a fact, but I do feel like when we're advancing our technology, we're advancing it for people, you know, to make people's lives better. But if you do that and then you don't make it accessible to the people, then for me, it kind of defeats the purpose. But that just could be a difference of values, you know. For another person, it's like, yeah, sure, I'm developing this technology, but for me, it's about the money. I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to feed my family. And who am I to disagree with that person's view on that? But I just feel like maybe they might benefit more from trying to make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's just somebody trying to feed his family. Like, he's just working 18 hours trying to come up with something that could help people but also make money for it, like, because he spent so much time working on that. Obviously it won't be just to make pennies, but I do also get that feeling when sometimes it starts off good but then it kind of loses track of what it initially was meant for. Like, even when like this whole time that we've been talking about social media, how it started off trying to connect people but then it just turned into this infestation of negative stuff, and then plastic surgery, how it started off with helping people with certain deformities that are caused by maybe genetics or accidents, and then it just turned into this commercial stuff that rich people do, or to change their appearance and make themselves more beautiful or something like that. And based on the precedents, like all the things that we've been talking about, there's no real reason why you wouldn't expect genetic engineering to end up being that way as well. So I think making things more accessible would be ideal, but then at the same time, trying to make the technology better for the people that are already using it is also as important. So it's kind of complicated, and it does beat the point if you make it to say, oh, we want to help the most vulnerable people, but then those most vulnerable people can't even afford what you're offering. So I do hope to see a change in, I suppose, the mentality of the people creating those technologies. At the same time, yeah, you can't really say, hey, make it a non-profit thing after you've worked all this time, spent all this time, energy, and money to create this new thing that's gonna help us all. So, I guess we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how it plays out. But definitely, it's gonna be a long time. It's gonna be quite a while before we see that happening. And Maybe we won't even be alive to see it. So we'll see. We'll see. It's interesting.
Definitely, we have to wait and see how it plays out. But I think there's no doubt that we will have a part to play in that. So hopefully we do end up being on the right side. If it goes wrong, that is. A happy ending isn't completely out of the picture too. But let us know what you all think. Are all these fears about the future of technology warranted? Are we just being overly conservative while missing something about how beneficial and necessary these advancements are? Maybe, given what we expect to gain, you may think it's worth the risk. Get in touch with us on our Instagram and Twitter and let us know. We really hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.